Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Retired Sergeant John Hines. John, good afternoon, and condolences on the tragic killing of your friend and indeed close colleague, Detective Garda Colm Horgan. John, little did we know yesterday when we were talking, and you were talking so movingly about the children in the Roscommon House of Horrors case, as it was known, and people were praising you for the work you did on that case. And indeed, the widow of the judge who presided over that case, the late Miriam Reynolds, also phoned in to praise you. John, you were a close friend of Colm Horgan.
Good afternoon, Joe, and to all your listeners. If I could just start, Joe, by conveying my own and my own family's sympathies, because Colm knew my wife Catherine and my three children as if he was part of our family. I just want to convey our sincere heartfelt love to his dad Marty and to his sister Deirdre and his four brothers Aidan, Brendan, Porrick and Dermot, and also, of course, to all his colleagues in Ungarda Shia Corner, who are, I'm sure, absolutely numbed by what has happened today.
And John, I know we might try and go for a different phone line. I think this is not satisfactory given the seriousness and the importance of the occasion. John, will you hold on? I go to Walter Kilcullen where we try and improve that line. Walter, retired Garda inspector. I know you knew Colm, but you were struck by John Hines yesterday. As I was about to say to John, I know yesterday afternoon and evening he was getting phone calls from people he had helped over the years who heard him on the programme, from Mother Gardaí, wishing him well, reminding him of small kindnesses he had visited on victims who he helped in court for sexual abuse cases, primarily child sex abuse. Walter, again, condolences to you as a retired Garda inspector on the killing and these awful, awful circumstances of this young man, Detective Garda Colm Horgan. You want to express your sympathy, Walter?
Oh, Joe, it's shocking, absolutely shocking. I can't believe it. Only last year we were down commemorating poor Henry Byrne and John Marley when they erected a memorial to them. Mm-hmm. And all our friends from Castlereagh were there. And 6 years ago, we had John Hines' retirement too, and everyone was there, including Colm. And the great nights we had and memories. And to hear that this morning, it's like a nightmare. Absolutely like a nightmare. John Hines and I go back a long way. John was a young guard in my unit in Kevin Street many years ago, so he was well trained in the police university in Kevin Street in Kilmainham, and he soldiered down to Roscommon, and you had him on yesterday, and we were all so proud of him, and he's so good at the job he did, and is sorely missed. But I know he always spoke of Colm. Colm was one of his right hand men, and was a family friend as well. And John is in an awful way to appreciate that.
John,
I'd say he's glad that the line probably got bad for a minute to get a chance to get his breath. But it's just shocking. We do nightmare.
John, when did you first meet Colm Horgan?
I first met him, Joe, when he came to Castlereagh in I think it was January of 1999. He had been a guard. He passed out at Templemore, I think, in 1995, and he went to Finglas first and transferred to Castlereagh. Then he came on to my unit. And from the get-go, Joe, Colm was the most reliable guy you could get. He was an absolute rock of integrity, of sense, and, you know, sense did one thing that every policeman or woman should have in abundance. And he was really and truly the true professional in the job. I mean, his attention to detail in every aspect of the job was absolutely exemplary. I could always rely on him. He's so, so reliable, and he was really and truly one of nature's gentlemen. I couldn't just praise him enough, Joe. I mean, at times like this, we say these things, but I mean, I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart, you know. He really and truly was my right-hand man there when I was at work, as Walter said, and he was one of the best friends that I ever had, both in Ungard, Síochána, and since I retired outside the job.
And as I said, John, I know Rebecca was talking yesterday evening and you were remarking on the number of calls you were getting about your interview yesterday from victims who wanted to thank you again, and they've contacted us as well, I hasten to add. And then when did you hear the news about this awful killing?
Well, Joe, I was asleep this morning at 2:15 and a colleague of mine, she was on my unit in Castlereagh, Nicola, she rang me to tell me what had happened. And I missed the call, but I rang her back because I felt that out of the hour must be something. It must be something very serious. And she broke the news to me now. I wasn't sure whether it was just that he was critically injured or fatally injured at that stage, but I found out very early this morning that he had passed away. And I mean, my own children are absolutely heartbroken as we are here, you know, because they knew him so well. They knew him as good as they know my own brother, and the respect and love and affection they had for him was just unbelievable, Joe. You know, to listen to them there today and not being able to speak to me on the phone, it's heartbreaking.
And John, feel free to step aside now if this is too difficult for you, but your tribute is, as I say, little did we know yesterday when we were talking to you and you were talking about your team and the Roscommon House of Horrors and a case, a horrific, horrific case. Did Colm work on those cases with you, John?
Oh, he did, and not just the Roscommon case, Joe. In practically all the cases, or most of the cases that I would have dealt with of that particular type of nature, Colm was my right-hand man, and I relied on him heavily in relation to putting investigation files together and everything. And I mean, you know, there was praise laundered on me yesterday and everything, whether right or wrong. But I mean, Colm deserves absolutely huge, huge praise in relation to being part of the one of the main cogs in the wheel that brought about all those convictions. And they probably wouldn't have happened only for, as I said earlier, his attention to detail to help put investigation files together and leave no stone unturned to get justice for victims of every case he investigated, be it minor, serious or otherwise, Joe.
And have you spoken to the family, his father, as going to bury his son?
I called to the house there, Joe, a couple of hours ago, and I mean, they're absolutely shattered. They're absolutely heartbroken. And what can you do, Joe? What can you say? What can they do? I mean, he left the house yesterday at approximately 2:00, I think it was. He watched some racing live on television with his dad, which they both had an interest in, and he said goodbye to his dad, and he went off to work. And that's the last memory his poor dad is going to have of him, like, you know.
And what was Colm like? He was a keen sportsman. Was he into GAA is one of the stories that's emerging. Really likable.
He was, Joe. And as I say, anything he did very, very well. He was just one of those good all-rounders. You know what I mean? No matter what he turned his hand to. And he was a great footballer. I remember he was a member of the Charlestown team that I think they beat Nemo Rangers in the All-Ireland quarter-final or semi-final of the club championship going back a number of years ago. He was a very, very talented footballer, and I know he played golf for many years as well, and he was a very keen and a very, very good golfer. And I have never, ever heard anybody say anything but a nice word or pass a nice comment about Colm Horgan. He was loved by everybody, the people of Charlestown. They are going to be really and truly devastated about this, Joe, because he was a man that stood out in a million in his community. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah.
You mentioned, I think, his four brothers and a sister.
Deirdre, that's right, yeah. And he was predeceased by his another sister, Colette Joe. She was actually his twin.
Ah, oh, God. I
think back in 2005, Colette passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry. This is a terrible, terrible burden for that family to bear.
Absolutely.
And is everyone home, so to speak?
Everyone was there this morning, Joe. Yes, everybody was there this morning, and neighbours were calling in. And you can see in people's faces the sense of loss that everybody is feeling as a result of this tragedy. You know, from a man to the smallest little child that was there, there were tears in their eyes this morning.
I know the fact that all his siblings are and his father are together. I know that doesn't bring anything back, but it makes the embrace in that family stronger. But I don't know how anyone would cope with such a horrific act of violence perpetrated on from your description and another description, a beautiful young man.
He was truly, Joe, the epitome of what it means to be a Garda in contemporary society. He was just one of those guys, and very few of us have those qualities. But he had them all. He really and truly had them all, you know. And whatever happened last night, Joe, we don't know. Yeah. We probably won't know for a long time. It'll probably come out at a later stage. But he, you know, from having worked with him and everything, he had a sense of calmness about him when we would be confronting a dangerous situation and everything. You know, he was one of those guys that would bring calm, talk the person down, and it would end in the way you'd want it to end. You know, he just had that quality as well.
And I'm looking at photographs of him, John, which are permanently now on RT News Now. Big, bright, open face, big smile on him.
That was him, Joe. Absolutely.
And you mentioned he was in Finglas as well, do you think, John? That'd be, as we know from K District programme.
That's right.
That can be a very difficult area. So he did a number of years there as well, did he? It's a busy area.
Busy spot, and he gained fantastic experience, which certainly showed when he came to Castlereagh. And, you know, he was so delighted to leave Dublin, I suppose, and get nearer and closer to home. You know, he'd have been about 20 miles from home when he got to Castlereagh, which is just the distance that you had to be at that particular stage, you know. But he brought that wealth of experience that he gained in Finglas, because, as you know, you're in the deep end there from the get-go, and he brought it with him, and it showed very early on. You know, we knew that we had a good guy on our unit, you know, we really did.
John, I'm very conscious of how close you were, and the fact that you even use the phrase that your own children are heartbroken, and they
absolutely, Joe.
He was like an uncle to them. But John, and this is totally up to you, I'm going to play a piece that somebody phoned in yesterday after the programme, and they began. They were talking about your contribution to his life, but they were also talking about Colm and the whole unit and how brilliant you were to him. Now, it's about 6 minutes long, John. You can go and have a cup of tea or talk to your wife. If you want to talk to me at the end of it, that's totally up to you.
Totally
up to you. But I just think on the day that's in it, this is somebody who was helped by the Gardaí, including the team led by John Hines, who I'm talking to now, whose right-hand man was the young Garda that was the young detective Garda. He was rising up to the ranks, who was so brutally killed last night on a quiet street in Castlereagh. This is Tony, who I spoke to earlier. Tony, good afternoon. I know you contacted us after yesterday's programme because you wanted to talk about the great work of retired Sergeant John Hines and sexual abuse cases. He was with us for most of the programme yesterday. But you, I know, like so many people, you want to begin, as we all do, by offering our condolences to the family of Detective Garda Colm Horkin and all his colleagues.
Yes, I'd very much like to pass on my condolences to that family and to John Hines, who would have known that Garda, Detective Garda, well, I'm sure, in the region where he was based, Joe.
Yeah. And how, Tony, how did you come across Sergeant John Hines?
Well, I was a victim of sexual abuse from an early childhood into my teens.
Mm-hmm.
It had a very negative impact on my life, although since that time with counselling, things have turned around positively, I'm glad to say.
Nice.
But anyway, I took a case. I wanted to seek justice. I've been drinking a lot. I had worked around the world to get as far away from the abuser as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that the most important thing eventually, after, because the fog of alcohol will not solve the issues, they make them worse. It affects negatively on friendships, on family. So I presented myself to a Garda station in a different area, actually, where I was living.
Okay.
And I spoke to a particular guard, a female guard, who was in charge of sexual abuse cases in that region, not the region where John was stationed. And I had to be psychiatrically assessed twice.
Mm-hmm.
So I can say I'm probably the only person I know who is clinically sane,
mm-hmm.
declared sane, to bring the case forward. So I spent over 8 hours with that female detective in that other region, recording my statement. They were really excellent there. And then I was informed that the case, because of the jurisdiction wasn't theirs, was moved to the area where John Hines was working. So John and I met, and my first impressions of him was that he was a very dedicated detective sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that in the course of a year or more, he left no stone unturned. He was extremely helpful to me and in bringing the case forward. He's a man that I developed great respect for and have the highest of respect for.
Mm-hmm.
He left no stone unturned interviewing other family members and friends based on information I'd given him as to how I was many years, given the fact that I was 46 when I brought the case and the abuse occurred from early age into my teens, Joe.
Yeah.
So I was also very, very happy to hear him on the radio yesterday. I know he's in retirement. I know that the many years of work specifically in sexual abuse cases had a toll, and I was very happy to hear that he got a more than well-deserved reward, a special award by an Garda Síochán for the specialist work he did and did so well for so many victims of sexual abuse. I'm a survivor now. I've been to counselling for a number of years, and I've turned a new chapter in my life. But there's one thing I would like to say, in addition, in relation to the great work that John Hines did. He rang me every Christmas for many years asking as to how I was, how are things going, how my dad was, and so forth, family members, etc. And I'm very grateful to him for that. He didn't have to do that. It's just a measure of a great man who went way beyond the call of duty to bring a successful conclusion to a pretty horrendous case. And I was also aware from John that he had one more to do. He told me he was looking forward to going back in uniform as a desk sergeant and then retiring. I believe that's what he did. The case in question was the one that was on air yesterday, which was, you know, shocking to most, I'm sure, all your listeners.
Yes.
But my strongest advice to anybody, Joe, if I may say this, and this comes from John as well, is that for anyone who's listening out there who's ever been abused or bullied, but particularly in what happened to me, sexual abuse, it will affect your life, it'll affect your soul. A person who goes through sexual abuse, you live with that for the rest of your life and you relive it again when you seek justice. In my case, I got justice, and it's very much in grateful thanks to the extraordinary hard work that John Hines put into that, and I will never forget him, and I can only wish him a lovely and happy and peaceful retirement, and condolences again to the family of Colin Horkin and to John as a colleague of his.
That's powerfully put, Tony. Powerfully put, and so genuine.
But I very much say again, if I may, that anybody who's been confronted with abuse, particularly sexual abuse, don't be afraid to come forward. It took me a long, long time. I mean, I was 46 when I took on the case. It took a number of years out of my life. But whether one gets justice in the end is up to the courts and the type of case being presented. But a lot has to do with the detective Garda who's assigned to the case. And in the case of John Hines, he's beyond number one. And I heard him say that guards who take on this role in the force as an investigator in sexual crimes need to put in more than the 100%. And yeah. I thought, well said, because that certainly is the case with John Hines. Without a shadow of a doubt, he's helped an awful lot of people quietly, I'm sure, behind the scenes. But ringing me around Christmas time, there was no reason to do so. But I was very, very pleased over a number of years after the case concluded successfully that he did that.
On this, on this awfully sad time for an Garda Síochána, that is a powerful testament, Tony, and I really appreciate it. Please stay well. I know, as you said, you're a survivor. Please stay well and look after yourself and your friends and loved ones. But I think John Hines, obviously, retired Sergeant John Hines deserves that tribute. But I hope he hears it, because I know it is a very, very difficult time for him and every other Garda and retired Garda as well. Tony, stay safe, and thanks indeed for contacting us.
Thank you very much, Joe. And once again, pass on my sincerest gratitude to John.
Okay.
God bless.
God bless you too.
Bye-bye, Joe. Bye-bye.
And indeed all members of John's team, which, as we've discovered, included his right-hand man, as he called him, Detective Garda Colm Horgan, who was shot and killed last night. John, we were talking yesterday about I asked you about your reaction to the Roscommon House of Horrors case that you pursued and your team pursued, including Colm, with such diligence. Six young children, savagely abused sexually, physically, and in other ways, deprivation. The list is almost too horrific to retail by both mother and father. What effect did that case have on Colm Horgan?
Well, excuse me, Joe, just before I answer that, I know Tony very well.
Good.
I'm absolutely humbled by what he has said, and I'm humbled by all the comments that people are phoning in with. You know, I went on your programme yesterday in the hope to get victims that are out there, and there are thousands of them who may up to now have found it not possible to bring themselves to go to a member of Garda Síochána and tell them what has happened to them, to have their cases properly investigated on their behalf. And I think anyone that listened to Tony there today, I think Tony has done more in that 6 minutes than I could have ever done, no matter how many times I went on your programme, to encourage them to come forward, to go through the court process. And as I said yesterday, it is a healing process itself by coming forward and doing that. So I hope what Tony said today will encourage people to do that. He did it better than I ever could. Yeah. How did this case affect Colm? It affected everybody that had anything to do with the job, because you're talking about some very, very young children, some that were just too young that couldn't even be interviewed. And the details, which I just couldn't go into, it wasn't just sexual abuse, it was physical abuse, and the neglect and cruelty was absolutely appalling. You know what I mean? It was a way of life for these kids. They thought that this was normal and everything, and I just couldn't go into the details or give any of the details, because people would turn off their radios. So it had an effect on Colm just the same way that it did on me. I had young children, as I said yesterday, at home, and everything like that. That added to the burden, of course. But myself and Colm were very, very close. I mean, I was his sergeant, Joe, but sergeant never came into it. We were just on a par. We were work colleagues. We talked things out. We always sat down during investigations, discussed everything, how it was going, before court cases and things like that. We sat down and we would ask each other questions like, what's the defence going to ask me when I'm in the witness box? Okay. And we used to act like barristers against each other, like, you know what I mean, to make sure that when we went into the witness box, we had everything right and all the I's were dotted and the T's crossed, and that's how we worked together. And he was, as I say, just such a professional. But of course it had an effect on him, Joe, but he would never show that or anything like that. We discussed it among ourselves, which was a great, great help that we could do that. My wife, Catherine, was a member of an Garda Síochána. She was a huge, huge help to me, because I could come home speak whatever little bit I did about it to her, and she was a rock and a pillar for me that I could get it off my chest, because she was a member of the force and could understand where I was coming from and what was happening, you know what I mean? Just like Justice Reynolds went home and discussed it with her husband and things like that. But, you know, it's our job, Joe. Cases like this that are to be investigated and everything like that, not everybody wants to do them. Not everybody is suitable to do it. But somebody has to do it, Joe.
One of the many memorable things you said yesterday, John, you said any guard that is assigned or indeed requests to be assigned to the sexual abuse investigations team can't give 100%. You have to give more than 100%. So obviously Colin fell into that category as well
And the reason I say that is because if you're the victim of a crime, just say a burglary, Joe, your house is broken into tonight and there's €1,000 taken and the people have gone through your private, you know, you're into every single room of the house and gone through your property and everything like that. It's an unbelievable invasion of privacy and everything. But you'll get over that in time and everything like that. Yeah. But anybody who is the victim of sexual assault or sexual abuse, regardless of how minor it might be or how serious it is, Joe, they bring that to the grave. Yeah. So they come to the Garda station, they tell you their story. You might be a stranger to them at the time. They put the burden over on you then, which it is our job, as I say, to take that as far as you can and try and get justice for them. And if we fail, Joe, we can't guarantee we're going to get convictions in every case, especially historical cases, because it's the victim's word against the thug's word. Yeah. So, I mean, if we fail, they have gone through all that for nothing as far as they would be concerned. So you have to go the extra mile, Joe. You have to take phone calls at 12 o'clock at night, or maybe even in the middle of the night, has often happened with me. And I never turned off my phone or refused to do that. Yeah. And I think it's very important for members of Garda Síochána Conor who do things like do investigate those cases, Joe, or any case really, that they keep in contact with the victim, tell them what's happening all along as much as they can, but that after it's all over, they also keep in contact, like Tony was saying there. And I think that's our duty. We're duty bound to do this. And you can see what it meant to Tony. The fact that I did ring him, but I would consider that part of my follow-up, part of my job. It's just a follow-up, and it is appreciated, because after the court case is over, you just can't forget about them and leave them there then to their own devices, like, you know what I mean?
And another serendipitous element to the tragedy last night is that Colm was shot and killed just near Garda Henry Bourne Road, and Henry was one of the two Gardaí, John Morley and Henry, we've spoken about it on this programme often, who were murdered 40 years ago next month in July. And Una Heaton has contacted us. Una, stay there if you can, John, if you wish. John, Una, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
You are related through your sister-in-law to Gerry McCabe.
Absolutely, and it brings it all back to the family now today, especially because it's very close to the day,
to the anniversary,
the date of the anniversary of Gerry, Lord have mercy on him. But I feel so sorry for that family of the Garda Colm Horrigan, because you go out in your way and serve the country and communities, and then to be struck down just because he's doing his duty. And anybody who takes the life of a guard, I think they should bring in life imprisonment, because the deterrent isn't strong enough, I don't think, because anybody puts their life on the line, like as a guard as such, and protects us, I think the sentences should be stronger.
And we know that Gerry McCabe's widow led a campaign for years, incredible campaign. I know you supported her as well.
I know. To this day.
Yeah. And Gerry had five children. As John said at the outset, he visited Colm Horrigan's home this morning to commiserate with his father and his four brothers and his sister. And
twin sister.
And his twin sister who predeceased him, we remember as well. But John says, what do you say? What, apart from being there, which is really important, but what can you say when people of all ages are crying around you at this awful tragedy? And that was the same for the McCabe family, I'm sure.
Horrific. I remember the day I was out painting, actually, in Dromoland doing a mural, and I heard the news, and I thought, what am I hearing, you know? And I couldn't believe it. It's just that when they called to Anne's house, and it's like when you have a phone at night and you hear, oh, God, no trouble, you know?
Yeah.
And Anne knew straight away it was Jerry.
Yeah.
And I just find it horrific to get a phone call like Anne got, or a visit like Anne got. But the news this morning was sort of riveting, because I felt it was like the story for Anne all over again. And I'm sure, I haven't spoken to her today, I want to leave her be, but I just feel the McCabe family will be going through all that again, and their heads and minds and hearts, and their hearts will go out to the Horrigan family and anybody else who's been taken by force, like with a gun, with a tug or whatever. But I find that the sentence doesn't fit the crime. It has to be changed. It has to be, because I think the law is too lenient on people who take people's lives. And if it were more severe, maybe people might be more conscious of taking people's lives, be it Garda, be it anybody.
Okay, I'm conscious.
And thank you for taking my call, and thank you for considering the McCabe and the Horrigan and any other guard that was killed in the line of duty. Thank you, Joe.
Okay, and condolences through you to Anne McCabe at this, well, the anniversary was only on the 7th of June. Jerry was murdered by the IRA in 1996. Paul McDo, the men were convicted, I think, of the murder charge was on a plea bargain reduced, but they served a long period in prison for the killing of Jerry McCabe. Paul McDermott, Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You say you had... You had the privilege of working in Castlereagh. Did you know Colm?
I did. I was in Castlereagh. I went there myself in 1998.
Yeah.
Colm came in 1999. I had the privilege of working with him for 3 years there, and worked with John Hines very closely. I worked with John in AGSI, and he brought forward his proposals about changing the law in relation to the sexual offenders. And he did so much, John, there. I would like to praise John for the work he did in relation to those cases, and his involvement in AGSI, and how he was so tenacious about looking to get the law changed. But Colm worked with John, and he was very much John's sidekick, if you excuse me using that word. He was, every sergeant needs a good team underneath them, and John had, Colm was his main team member, and they were a brilliant pairing between them. Colm was a lovely individual, very, very genuine, sound. We did have work with him through my role as crime prevention officer. I met him at Ballardreen, where he was for many years up there, up to quite recently, working with the community, and he was fantastic to work with. I had experienced him with different roles in the job, and you could always rely on him. He had a happy face. He'd think before saying something, but when he says it, he'd be spot on. Enjoyable guy to be out with. Very interested in the community. I know he had a big involvement in the GAA, but it was a privilege to work with him. And the teamwork, the two of them, and the work they did for the people in those abuse cases was beyond the call. And they did an awful lot of them. And it was just, he's a sad loss. And I was stunned and shocked this morning to hear what happened when a friend rang me to tell me about it.
And Paul, I know you're retired a couple of years, but again, condolences to you and other Gardaí and retired Gardaí and the family of Colm. Michael Allen, just before I go back to John to let John go. Michael Allen.
Good afternoon.
You're in Dublin. You're in Ashbourne, which is outside Ashbourne County Meath. But you just want to remind people of the work that the Gardaí have been doing in this pandemic, which even has raised their affection in the community even higher. And it was high, we know that, higher in Ireland than in most countries. What happened yesterday, Michael?
Well, yesterday was my 70th birthday.
Yeah. Okay, you there? No, Michael's gone. Sorry, the lines. I'll read out what Michael texts us in. Yesterday was my 70th birthday. Two local Gardaí arrived up with a cake. A complete and total surprise. I live alone. And the two Gardaí who were female, they arrived with a cake and a card. They had even called the day before, just checking up on my meds and my shopping. It's an incredible story. It's an incredible story. John Hines, is there any other members of Colm's family in the Gardaí, or is there a history of involvement with the Gardaí in terms of membership?
No, not in the Gardaí, Joe. But Sister Deirdre is a prison officer and has been for a long, long time. I think she may be eligible to retire sometime next year.
Okay.
Nobody in the guards.
Well, if you would, John, as you finish, and again, deepest condolences to you and your family and the friends, would you just mention the names of each of John's siblings and his father so we can offer our condolence properly?
Yeah, Colm's father, Marty.
Marty, okay.
And his siblings, Deirdre, Aidan, Brendan, Porrick and Dermot. And all his family, his Aunt Kitty that I was talking to this morning, who was absolutely heartbroken.
Yeah. Okay.
And the wider Charlestown community and all of his colleagues, of course, in Garda Síochána, Joe, because whether you knew Colm or not, or no matter what member, something like this would happen to, we are a very, very close, knit family, Joe, in Garda Síochána. And we look out for each other, and this will really and truly be hurting every single member, both serving and retired. And I offer my condolence to everybody, Joe. And please God, some good might come out of it. But what good can come out of something like this, Joe? But I just hope it won't be for nothing.
Well, our yesterday, good eva anam, John, and condolences again to the death of not just a colleague, not just a wonderful servant to the community, not just a wonderful son and brother, as you say, like an uncle to your children. May he rest in peace, safe in the arms of Our Lady, Queen of Heaven. John Hines, retired Garda Sergeant, and as you say, you and Colm were buddies in every sense of that word, all the good sense of that word. Stay safe, John, and stay well, and please, we will write to the family anyway, but please pass on our condolences to you and to the, because it sounds like Colm was part of your family as well.
Absolutely, John.
To the extended family. It's a sad, sad day and a sad, sad time. John,
thank you, Joe, and thanks to everybody who came on there and spoke highly of Colm. Thank you very much. Bye for now.
Thank you, John.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And joe@rt.ie. As I mentioned yesterday, one of the reasons why retired Sergeant John Hines contacted us was prompted by a letter to the programme, which we read out over a week ago from the parent of a preteen girl who was being groomed and was persuaded to give vivid and graphic sexual images and videos to these men. And she was at her wit's end and she wanted advice and guidance. And almost everyone, including John yesterday, the point was, please go to the Gardaí. Please go. There's a special unit. It need not be your local Gardaí if it's too heartbreaking for you to talk to people that you might know. And that was the reason John contacted us, and he spoke about the work of his team, including Colm Horkin, on the Roscommon House of Horrors case, which is just beyond horrific at this stage. And we've had a number of other communications to people to contact us, and we've spoken to them. Some people, as you will realise from the detail and what they're going through, are unable to speak, but they want their story told, and this is just one we received yesterday.
Dear Joe, I wanted to write to you to say how grateful I am for the way in which you highlighted the importance of reporting sexual abuse to the Gardaí. My own story is like many you have discussed, one of horror. I grew up one of six children in the 70s and 80s in what from the outside seemed like a typical Irish middle class family. My mother worked outside the home, and my father also worked, but was a chronic violent alcoholic. From the outside looking in, we appeared no different, I guess, than anyone else. Except, of course, there was abuse of myself and my younger sister happening behind closed doors from a very young age. The abuser, our older brother, used and abused us for many years as sexual playthings. Not only had we to grapple with the horror of that, we also were living in constant fear of him, of our father, and of life in general. We told our parents in our early 20s what had happened, and it was all brushed under the carpet. There was never any suggestion of getting help or reporting to Gardaí. 5 years ago, we walked into a Garda station and made an official complaint, which is now due to come to court next year after many delays. We paid a very high price for telling the truth. Our father disowned us and totally supports our abuser, who went on to abuse others and served a prison sentence for one crime. And we have been made to feel like we in some way did something wrong. That feeling never goes away, that this is our fault and that our family, such as it was torn apart by our revelations. So my point is, I cried today hearing your show, at the guest urging those who have been abused to come forward and tell the truth. You never get over the horror of childhood sexual abuse. And even today, after many years of therapy, there are times when it all gets too much and I feel I can't carry on. But somehow, we have managed to carve out some kind of normality for ourselves. And as a mother myself, I cannot understand why we were not protected. No one helped us until that day when we made our complaints to the Gardaí, who have been nothing short of fantastic. The more victims that come forward, the more our society becomes aware of the horrors that can happen in any household, even so-called middle-class proper families like ours. Once again, thank you. If you could read this out, it might help others. Please keep my name anonymous.
And indeed, we will respect that. Thank you, Sinead, for reading that. And again, just a warning to people. Obviously, we began talking about the killing of Detective Garda Colm Horgan, but now we're talking about issues which some parents with children might want to shield them from for the time being before you have a serious and separate conversation with them. Just that little remark. Sean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
One of the points that came up yesterday was John Hines talked about his own trauma. And he mentioned it there with Colm as well, after the Roscommon House of Horrors case, regarded as one of the worst abuse cases ever to come before the Irish courts. And then Frank Buckley, the widower of Justice Miriam Reynolds, who was the judge, much praised judge in that case, who died 2 months after the end of the case at a very young age, 52. He spoke about the effect it had on her, and she would come home every evening, and she had children around the same age as two children around the same age at the time the children were being horrifically abused. And he said she would cry with the impact. Sean, your daughter works in the court services, and you want to, I suppose, reinforce that point, the effect that these cases have on people who are working on them, so to speak.
That's right, Joe. I mean, the sergeant talked about his difficulty. The judge's widower talked about her difficulty. Mm-hmm. But there, in every courtroom in the country, there's a whole pile of invisible people.
Yeah.
The court staff. And they see and hear and have to go through all of the same stuff as the Gardaí and the judges. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever sees them.
Yeah.
They're invisible.
And they hear every element of the case.
They hear every element of the case. They see what is supposed to be seen. And, you know, their job is essential. They have to be there. Yeah. But nobody pays any remarks to them, and they get no support either.
Oh, do they not? No.
You know, no. Talking about the judge going home and hugging her children. Mm. After one child abuse case, it wasn't sexual abuse now.
Yeah, okay.
I know my daughter came home with 8 litres of milk for her own children so that they wouldn't starve. Okay. Now, what she was going to do with 8 litres of milk, I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's a very vivid picture of how...
But it was a completely... She's an intelligent woman. It was a completely illogical thing to do. But logic wasn't operating with her at that time. It was pure emotion.
And it's also worth remembering, because we had a communication from a juror who was on another
case.
That's
right, yeah.
And he's still deeply upset by what he heard. Yeah. There was no counselling available. But the juror would have been, if it was in cases, often the jury are asked to retire when there's the argument which might, the judge has to hear arguments about whether certain evidence is allowed or not.
Yeah, but the court staff have to listen to all
exactly,
that.
Exactly.
And it's all the court staff. It's not just the members of the court service.
Yeah.
You have the legal teams that are in there. And they're listening to that. And they're looking at that.
And I presume... Now, is there any counselling available or employment assistance? Or
There is within the Department of Justice or the court service somewhere. I was out talking to my daughter last night about this. And she said there is an employee assistance officer. But getting access to that.
Yeah.
I mean, that person has to deal with everybody and everything within the thing, including sick leave and everything else that's going on.
People with other issues, that arise in people's lives,
Like the same thing goes to doctors and nurses. They're expected to just get on with it, you know.
Yeah. Okay, say with us, Sean, Christy O'Donovan is an ex Garda and has a son, a member of the force. Christy, good afternoon and condolences to you and your former colleagues and indeed your son on this. You say you remember Jerry McCabe and Henry Bourne and John Morley being murdered.
Well, Joe, I got a call there from your researcher there, Richie, there, and I've been on to him some years ago about another scenario at the work I was doing in Limerick, the housing estates there, so he rang me today there. First thing to do was I want to pass on my sincere condolences to Detective Garda Hawkins' family.
Yeah.
I mean, to wake up again this morning, just like I said to that man there, everything comes back to you. I'm just going off for a walk now because I'm not in a good place myself because it brings everything back. I remember Mick Clark and Lord, rest his soul, I'd been working in Portlaoise prison at the time it was going on in the 70s and all these problems that went on. And, you know, I mean, I think of Jerry McCabe, Lord, rest him, and passing through a dare. I never passed by without thinking of him and Ben O'Sullivan. Mm-hmm. And then I remember I used to walk in Boreen off. They still live there a lot of the time. And I remember coming in there doing checkpoints when Detective Garda Morley and Bourne lost their lives. And it's like as if, you know, you wind back time again and it brings you back to not a very good place, Joe.
Yeah, I understand, Christy. I understand. And you say it so well, but you remind us of all the other Gardaí who have fallen in the line of duty. Christy O'Donovan, mind yourself, Christy, and say...
Could I just say this story before I go?
Of course you can.
Yeah, on a passing... Like, they talk about families. Now, you know, the Garda family is totally different to a lot of families because, I'll tell you, when you hurt one of us, you hurt us all. And, you know, it's poignant because I'm retired for 16 years. I'm still dealing with problems that people are not very fortunate that I can maybe help them out. And it's a legacy, I suppose, that will live on. And I'd have to say this, that I started the neighbourhood watch here with the local way back in the 80s in Burr.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's still going strong. The I was so proud there during that pandemic how well they sorted themselves and how dependent the people were on them. And, you know, happy days in that respect. And, you know, put this way, our work and that lovely sergeant down in Roscommon, that detective sergeant, detective guard that died, you know something, they will always live on in us because mm-hmm. these people that are there now are fantastic people. And we will we'll never lose what we have with the community.
And I'm very conscious, Christy, that you were able to, which proves your point in a poignant way, you were able to mention other Gardaí who were killed. Mick Clerken, who you mentioned, it was an IRA booby trap bomb that killed him. It's just the.
Joe, I suppose, seeing that I have you there now, because it's like the late, and I'm not making light of this, but look, I suppose the bottom line is that, you know, in my day there was no counselling for the guards. I was a young lad from West Cork, found myself above in Clonus and Monaghan at 19 years of age.
Wow.
And I spent 3 years in Portlaoise prison. So the first 5 years of my service, having spent 18 weeks training, was between the Border and Portlaoise prison, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, anyone that went through that, Joe, there was no counselling there at that time. And, you know, I'm delighted, and I have to mention this, and I'm rushing things, but that K district scenario, that programme there, done on Virgin Television, do you know something? I'm a very stout man. But I had my chest out every night, and there was a tear in my eyes watching that. Because I tell you, it's about time that the people of this country saw what the guards do at ground level. And I finish on this.
Okay.
When I was stationed in Burr or in Coachford, and to be fair, when I left both places, the locals had to do for me, it was an insult to see a young lad get into trouble under my watch. I think every guard should go out with that in mind, is that young fellas have to be looked after.
Okay, well said. And I know you did great work in Castleconnell and Limerick as well, Christy, especially with young people. So thank you for your service.
And Joe, thank you for your service. Thank you, Joe.
You're very kind. And again, condolences. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Joe@rte.ie and 51551. Wash your hands. Ray Nocter. Ray, good afternoon. You say we need people like John Hines and Colm Horgan, especially in the work they were doing in that sexual abuse unit, because unfortunately you were a victim as well.
Yeah, good afternoon, Joe. Thanks for having me on. My condolences to that detective guard. I didn't personally, I didn't know him, but yeah, it's a lot to the community. And you know, when you sign up to be a guard, you're there to serve and protect and mind the community, as well as their own family. And you can't replace someone when you lose someone. You just can't, John. And I've been, you know, throughout the years, speaking to Gardaí, who have went out of their way to help me.
Yeah, John, I'm sorry to say this again, but I'm just going to have to hold off on that line until we get a better line. Were you on the speaker, or...?
Oh, is that yours?
Yeah,
better?
That's a different side. Okay.
Okay, sorry, okay. Sorry, my apology.
No, you're fine, you're fine, you're absolutely fine.
Yeah, just
but
to repeat,
you were 8 years of age when
your
abuse started, went on for 9 years, my God.
Yeah, and I vaguely remember the Roscommon case, Joe, because it was brought up in my case in reference to, mine was the third worst sexual abuse case in Ireland at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one in Europe, and the other one was the Roscommon case that particular guard worked on.
John,
and we need people like him. We really do, Joe, because they do terrific work. And, you know, you can tell he went above and beyond his duty, Joe.
Yeah.
Above and beyond.
Did your case end up in court, Ray?
It did, Joe, yeah, okay. It did. I had Justice Finnegan in my case. And prior to that, I had Justice Joseph Matthews, who was the sentencing judge for David Murray. Now, he could only give him 10 years.
Yeah.
He would have rather given 20 years, 30 years, but he couldn't. And here lies the problem, Joe. In terms of sentences, the judge's hands are tied to judiciary. They have nowhere to go. They can only give a certain sentence to somebody who abuses children.
Yeah. And how long did your abuser, David Murray, how long did he spend in prison?
Well, he got 10 years, Joe.
Yeah.
And I remember, actually, because when he was being released, you actually rang me, your show rang me.
Mm-hmm.
To say he was being released, I any comment.
Because you had been on with us talking about him before.
Correct.
Yes, that's
been I was told, that I would be informed when he would leave the prison.
And it was Liveline who informed you?
Does Liveline inform me? And Joe, the fear that puts in, there's grown men out there today, Joe. Grown big men. I'm only a small chap. That's all I am. I'm only 5 foot one.
Yeah.
But that's neither here nor there. But there are grown men out there who were in that industrial school with me. And the minute they hear his name, they shiver. Yeah. They haven't received counsel because they're afraid. The other side of it, Joe,
and
is
there wasn't there eight other victims who also came forward?
There was, Joe, including his stepsons, you know, his foster sons. And, you know, he got out and he went over to Wales. And the police of Scotland Yard actually rang me about him, you know. And he was sent back to Ireland. Like, when he got out of jail, Joe, he had money. He could go where he wanted to. When I got out of St. Joseph, Joe, all I had was two black bags and a cloud and a bad, bad memory of what went on. I had shame and guilt. And I shouldn't have felt like that. But that's what I was left with. And I was left to pick up the pieces. And I'm glad, Joe, I went and got counsel.
Yeah, well done.
And to hear that man speaking about people in the court, you have telephonists and all who type out every single word, Joe.
Yeah, good point, yeah. This
every court, single
court
word.
Workers, yeah.
You know? And it's terrible, you know, it must be horrific on them. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, we are survivors, and sometimes when survivors report abuse, they're treated like villains. That they're the villains. You shouldn't have reported. You know, especially when it's somebody within the family, Joe. There lies the problem. Whether it be the mother, the father, and it's rarely the mother, but, you know, when it's somebody within the family, the son, the nephew, you know, oh, you can't do this, don't do that. You shouldn't have done this.
And
my message, Joe, can I just say this?
Of course, yeah.
My message is anyone that's abused in any family, in any sentence, no matter where you are, you report it. And the Gardaí are excellent, Joe, for helping out.
Yeah.
They're excellent.
Yeah, yeah.
They go above and beyond their duty, and I mean that.
And Ray, did you face David Murray in court?
Yes, I did.
And what was
and
that
the
like?
Fear left me, Joe.
Did it? Okay.
The fear left me because I had nightmares after, you know, and I went to see him in prison.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I stood him down.
And what was the prison encounter?
He wouldn't look at me, Joe. He just kept looking at the table till I banged the table. And then he looked at me. And then I told him. You know, I felt like killing him, shooting him. But, you know, I'm glad I didn't, Joe.
Now, what did you say to him?
I told him that, you know, I'm no longer afraid of him. And when he gets out of prison, he will be looking over his shoulder for the rest of his life.
And did he say anything to you?
He didn't say. He just said to the officer that was standing beside him that I was threatening him. Yeah. That wasn't a threat, Joe. That was the truth. You know, I don't know where he is now or what's happening to him, and I couldn't care less.
Okay. And have you any contact with the other victims? Were they all... I know some of them were related to him, were they not? But did the abuse take place mainly in St. Joseph's, the industrial school in...
Yeah, it did,
yeah.
And like it came
where
out
he, where he worked as a care worker.
Yeah, as a child care worker.
So-called, yeah.
Yeah, and it came out that, like, he was like a god there, you know? Such a brave man looking after 12 wild boys. We were supposed to be wild and couldn't be tamed or anything. We were human beings, and this is the treatment we got. Every evening, Joe, I came in from school. I was a minute late. I got a horrid broke over my head. Or a huge scrubbing brush. Or he is Alsatian dog.
Oh,
to viciously attack me.
Oh, my God.
And bite me, you know? And that's the treatment I got. And all I got from other people around. Not everyone.
Yeah.
But most people, most adults. It serves you right. You shouldn't have caused trouble.
Oh, God.
And, Joe, you know... I got bet off for having no homework done. How could I have homework done? He was giving me wine to drink.
Oh, my God.
And I was going to school drunk. And then I got beaten for that.
And you were being fostered in that home, was that?
No, I was in the orphanage, Joe.
Yeah. And where was he feeding you the wine and abusing you?
There was a house with 12.
Oh,
there
sorry, 12 yeah, okay. In, yeah, in I understand. Yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
were young teenagers.
And
then.
he was a house master or whatever.
He was the house master.
Ah, yes.
And he could do what he liked.
Yes.
He answered to nobody.
Yes.
You know? And any time I reported any incident that was going on, the report went back to him and I got another beating.
Ah. Ray, I'm so sorry. I know. I spoke to you before. I'm so sorry. I hope. I know you've, as you said, you found a brilliant counsellor.
I did, Joe.
And she got you.
And I owe my life, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because all was on my head was suicide, and I don't deserve to live, and I didn't want to live. How can I face the guilt and the shame?
Okay.
But she had taught me one thing, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I should not feel guilty. I should not feel ashamed. It isn't my fault.
And as John Hines and his team, as I say, including the late Colm Horkin, were saying, that was a message yesterday before this tragedy unfolded last night. Please, please, please have the courage like you did, Ray, to go forward. Ray, stay safe and stay well. That's Ray Knocker. Thank you again, Ray.
Oh, my condolences to that detective again,
Well said.
Thank you, Joe.
Mary Fearick. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were involved in the House of Horrors case, as was referred. Now, we can't identify anyone, as you know.
Of course.
Because you were your court official. Your memories of it in the generality?
Well, I was the registrar in the Central Criminal Court during the prosecution of the father in that trial.
Okay.
And, I had sat through numerous trials, murder trials, very serious rape trials, and many other types of trials and family law matters. But that was the trial that had the greatest effect on me.
My God.
And even the judge at the time, it was so sad listening, particularly to the boy giving evidence against his father and looking at his father.
Yeah.
It was horrendous, absolutely horrendous, that this could be happening in Ireland in, during current times.
Yeah.
This
trial took place this century. We're only 20 years into it, yes.
Absolutely. I think it was around 2012, was it?
Yeah, well, the case began, I think, in 2009, but
yes.
there was injunctions taken by Mina Banny Creebean
to correct.
Stop.
That's right. That's right indeed, yes, in the High Court, yeah.
It had nothing to do with the case, but anyway.
No. But somebody mentions there the jury.
Mm-hmm.
I often wondered, I spoke to the jury after trials, and, they leave the courtroom having heard information, having heard words that they've never heard expressed by people before, and have heard the most intimate of details. Mm-hmm. And there's no support or there's no counselling available.
So I know you never become immune to this, Mary, but am I correct in thinking that one of the points you make about in your empathy with jurors is that jurors come in and hear, no warning, they could hear a horrific case, which was a call we got the other day from the juror.
That's
saying,
right, yeah.
But you're doing this on a regular basis, so you can put things insofar as anyone ever could into perspective, or you'd hear things that you might have heard before. That doesn't inure you to the upset. But you're right about jurors, that they're in and then they're gone after hearing what could be a horrific case.
And they have nobody to talk to about it. I think even going home to talk to their family, it doesn't mean as much.
Yeah.
You know,
you
just can't explain how, you can't explain the effects of these intimate details, given by children against their parents.
Mm.
It must be the hardest thing. It is the hardest thing in the whole wide world. To stand up there and face your father or your mother.
Yeah, I know. In that case, it was the mother and father. Though, as you say, you were working on the trial of the father. God Almighty! And did he offer any remorse for what he did to his children?
No. I mean, I'm not going to go into details of the trial. And by the way, I'm retired now, I am in position.
Just incredible.
But it was one of those incredibly sad cases.
Okay. And Mary,
but while I'm on the phone, I'd just like to offer my condolences also to the family of
Colm Horgan
who was tragically killed last night.
Okay.
And it's a very sad day for the Garda Síochána. Yeah.
And the whole extended justice system of which you're
part of,
Mary. And
which
thank you for your service. Thank you, Mary. That's Mary.
Okay,
Fury.
Joe.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Brendan Gordon, I think you're in Castlereagh. Are you as we speak, Brendan?
No, I'm not in Castlereagh at the moment, but I'm from Loughlin. Fair from Castlereagh. And first of all, I'd like to extend our sympathies to the family and friends and colleagues of Garda Síochána.
And wasn't Loughlin mentioned earlier? Is that near where Henry Morley? John Morley and Henry Bourne were killed 40 years ago next month. Is that right? Is that near that?
That's been the same area.
Okay.
That was 40 years ago on the 7th of July this year.
Yeah.
But in 2017, we erected a monument to...
I remember. Well done, yeah.
To the two that were killed.
And you were heavily involved in getting that monument, were you, Brendan?
I'm from the area, and we passed by it every day of the week, and we decided it was time, because at the time the country was a different place at the time, and then lads retired and the guards got transferred and life moved on, I suppose. And it was just left in the long finger, and we decided in 2017 that we would erect the monument. And actually, at the moment, we were organising a little commemoration there on the 7th of July, and because of the coronavirus, things have been changed.
We
were hoping to have mass at the site.
And unfortunately, the coronavirus is going to affect the funeral of Colm Horgan, we presume, which a funeral... like that, I'm thinking of Tony Golden's funeral. Thousands torn out in Ireland because both serving members and friends because of our high regard for the Garda and Garda Síochána.
Yeah, the respect people have for the uniform and the people that serve in the uniform.
Yeah.
And, without them, we have to have some law and order in the country. But without them, we'd have nothing, you know.
And I can't imagine what the atmosphere is like in the area today.
I very, very sad. Very, very, very sad. Now, I was talking to some retired members there today now that know Garda Síochána well, and they're devastated by it, you know.
Yeah.
And just close to tears now, talking to them today.
Yeah, I can understand. And I know the Garda Commissioner, Joe Harris, is in Castlereagh at the moment, and he's saying it was a random act that led to the death of... Garda Síochána. He was just going about his business. Something happened in terms of, I half suspect from what we've heard already, he was helping somebody or thought he was getting out to help somebody, and for whatever reason the whole situation took a turn, and that man managed to get Colm's gun and use it against Colm, which is just unspeakable tragedy.
And it's very hard to know how. Hopefully, we'll find out down the road. Today isn't the day for that, but hopefully, we can find out exactly what happened, and something like that won't happen again. You know, because even though they carry guns, can be a disadvantage at times. Yeah. You know, because you can talk your way out of situations.
And had you met Colm, Brendan?
I'd have met him on a few occasions with mutual friends, guys that work with him, you know, but I wouldn't know him personally.
But I suspect,
he was a very, very nice fella.
Yeah, but I suspect from what you're saying, I know you campaigned for the memorial to Henry and John, but was Colm would have stood at that memorial, I suspect.
Oh, he would have been there in July of 2017.
Okay.
And like all the local Gardaí at the time contributed towards it, and we raised money through the Gardaí from all over the country and from the Gardaí associations and from football clubs, GA clubs in Roscommon and Mayo. And, 1,100 people turned out that day, you know, to commemorate them, you know.
Well, condolences to you and all your neighbours and friends and the general Castlereagh area, Brendan. That's Brendan.
Yeah, thanks very much, Joe.
Thank you, Brendan. That's Brendan Gordon.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And finally to the family of the late Detective Garda Colm Horgan, Marty, his father, Deirdre, his sister, Aidan, Pádraig, Brendan and Dermot, his brothers and his Aunt Kitty that John mentioned earlier on. We offer sincere condolences. I'm very conscious, looking at the amount of calls here about Colm, that the funeral would have been an enormous occasion, but the pandemic means that the funeral will be severely curtailed in terms of attendance. But I just want the family to know that the praise for Colm from those who met him and worked with him and his friends is immense on this awful, awful day.